Booyaka, booyaka, it's the One Liner Podcast, y'all. Booyaka, booyaka. Incredible. I am Scott Morris, and joining me today is Drew Tavendale.
Hello.
Okay, what we'll pretend to be a packed show to get through, so let's get cracking. The Tim Burton-Johnny Depp connection returns to our screens again, this time seeking from making a song and dance about demon hairdressers to reimagining and 3D-ing Alice in Wonderland for us. In part of a slightly worrying trend, this is not your father's Alice in Wonderland, placing itself as an extension of sorts. The real-world Alice, played by Mia Wasikowska, is prompted by an unexpected and unwanted proposal of marriage to return down the rabbit hole and into Wonderland. It's not quite the same Wonderland, however. The Red Queen, voiced by Helena Bonham Carter, has seized power and exiled her sister, the White Queen, Anne Hathaway. Generally making life unpleasant for all of her subjects, at least a few of those who have managed to keep their heads, including Johnny Depp's Mad Hatter, Stephen Fry's Cheshire Cat, and Matt Lucas's Tweedledum and Tweedledee, they are given some hope by a prophecy that Alice will return and slay the Queen's most feared creature, the Jabberwocky. Alice is not too keen to tangle with such a beast, but everyone else seems to think she's their only hope. Will she rise to the occasion? And more importantly, is that occasion worth the bother of suffering those nerdacular 3D glasses yet again? Drew Tavendale, what say you?
Well, let's cover the 3D point first, as it's the most recent one you made. No, clearly not. The 3D, once again, adds absolutely nothing to the film in any way whatsoever, other than making you pay more for it. As far as finding a worrying trend that they've effectively invented a story based on the themes and characters from the original work. In this case, that's unfounded because the original work is, if you'll excuse my Clatchian, fucking awful. I thought I'd read this book. Apparently I haven't, because I would have remembered that it's the second worst book I've ever read, possibly only made worse by the sequel to it, Through the Looking Glass and What Alice Found There. Because the book is basically devoid of characterization, character development, plot, and narrative at all. And it's just a bunch of weird shit happening one after the other. So the fact that Tim Burton's decided to just pick a couple of iconic characters and discard everything else is definitely working in the film's favour. That said, though, it's still in need of a coherent plot, or a compelling plot anyway. There are set pieces here and there I found quite entertaining. Johnny Depp, unsurprisingly, is very good as the Mad Hatter, although I was entertained more by a deranged bunny going, "Spoon!" more than pretty much anything else in the film, which is probably not much of a recommendation for it. Matt Lucas as Tweedledee and Tweedledum works rather well, and one or two other bits that quite amuse me, and the rest of it I found rather dull and uninspiring. It's bog-standard hero film plot with an unnecessary action set-piece ending. And I'm afraid it just didn't do an awful lot for me. It wasn't that it was badly made, it just didn't seem to hang together as a film all that well. But as I say, given the source material, it's perhaps not surprising given that it has no plot whatsoever.
This news just in from our erstwhile correspondent Craig Eastman, he feels that Alice sidesteps the undercurrent of the text in favour of family ticket sales, and he's very disappointed with Mr. Burton. Fair enough, I guess. My problem with this isn't really so much that it sidesteps an undercurrent of the text, is that it just doesn't do a particularly good job in trying to desperately shoehorn it into a filmic narrative structure. I thought the parts where it is, I guess, being truer to the spirit of Carol stuff and just bombing around with this, like, fairly random action set pieces, I thought that was paced well enough and that was at least fun. The parts that just don't fit in with the rest of the film are the parts where Alice is sort of umming and ahhing about, oh, character development, I should try and be a better person and true to myself and so on and so forth, and soul-searching at the end of it. And those bits just grind to a halt and are no fun whatsoever and are quite badly acted and quite badly handled. And not very good at all. Mm. It just ruins the pacing of the film. It's a massive trough and it can't really get itself out of it. For the rest of it, when it's just being the wacky Johnny Depp, zany accent half hour, fine, great, I love it because I like Johnny Depp. But if it was anyone other than Johnny Depp, it'd probably be a completely unwatchable film. It's the 3D. I guess I like the 3D well enough here. It's still not worth paying extra for. I thought it did a decent job at least of slightly convincing yourself that you're in a different world, which I guess was the point that a lot of people made about Avatar. I didn't really feel it at all there. I saw elements of it here, but still not enough to really warrant the premium on the ticket price.
No. Another problem with Silver Show, as I said, have you read the book, Scott?
Not really. I suppose I must have done it at some point, but I mean, I flicked through it just before we came on air through the wonderful resource of Project Gutenberg, but it really wasn't ringing too many bells for me.
Oh, I mean, I always assumed that I had. I was certainly familiar enough with some of the characters, and it's definitely from the original illustrations, because those were familiar to me, not from the Disney film.
Mm.
But I thought, having watched it last week and having the book around in the house, oh, I'll read that. And, oh boy, I wish I hadn't. I don't think I've read two worst books in my life. It's awful. To the point I had to force myself to finish it, but I just wanted to see what was in it that was in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I just spent most of the week wondering what on earth had made it such a presumably cherished classic when it's so awful. It's like Lewis Carroll thought, you know, that random weird shit that happens in dreams that has no logic and no sense, and I'll just write that down, that'll make a book. And it, anyway, I could go on about that for a while.
So what you're saying is you're not a fan?
I am not, no. This was apparently based on the Jabberwocky poem, which is about a page, well, not even a full page long in the book. So there's not really a lot for it to be based on. So having no plot from the original to really work with, it's kind of like the screenwriter, Linda Wolverton, based the screenplay on Return to Oz and Hook, which wasn't a good move in either case.
No.
But it really is quite like them, like sort of going back to a mystical land that's now under the rule of a tyrant, and the grown-up person, as Robin Williams was in Hook, and going back and not in the first being able to remember all the fantasy that they've been a part of in the past.
Yeah.
And neither of those films are any good. And it doesn't help that they seem to have largely lifted the plot straight from them to make this. Well, I mean, it was Tim Burton and Johnny Depp, and I thought, that probably can't go wrong, and unfortunately, I was proven incorrect.
I couldn't honestly say it's gone wrong. I didn't actively hate the film or anything. I liked it well enough for what it is, but at the same time, I can't really recommend it to anyone, and for another film that, by all accounts, is being so massively successful, it's another 3D film that doesn't deserve to be so massively successful.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I said, I had no particular feeling of vitriol towards it. I didn't actively dislike it. I was more just bored by it. It was relieved somewhat by the pieces here and there I enjoyed. And towards it got to the end, I was like, is that it then? Why is everybody going to see this?
So basically, it's a shiny bauble to distract yourself for a couple of hours. Fabulous. Just what we need. So Jackie Chan is perhaps best known in the UK for his light-hearted comedy action roles, often featuring grinning, gurning, heavily accented dialogue, and him injuring himself in the blooper reels. Whether it's his advancing years or the increasing insurance premiums that's prompted the move, I don't know, but he's now taking a more serious dramatic role in the Shinjuku incident, albeit not one that's far removed from violence. Playing the character of Steelhead, he's a Chinese villager who seems happy enough with a pastoral life until his fiancée risks heading off to Tokyo to seek a fortune. Set during the early 90s, in a time before the recent economic growth had reduced the flow of the Chinese immigration to other countries in search of opportunity, Steelhead decides to join this flow in search of love, not money. Taking manual labour jobs and resisting the shortcut criminal methods that a lot of his compatriots have been doing, he searches for his fiancée, although he won't like what he finds. All the while, chance incidents with the local detective and a subhead of the Yakuza and his own increasing standing within the Chinese immigrant community sees him thrust into the middle of a battle for control of the Tokyo criminal underground, whether he likes or not. Now, the last time I'd heard of the writer-director Tung Sing Lee was about 5 years ago with his similarly themed One Night in Mong Kok. This shows that his cinematography at least has come on quite a bit since then. There's some really pretty shots of the Japanese coastline and Tokyo by night throughout the film. And there's also one incredibly shonky-looking bit of CG really early on that is in no way representative of the film as a whole, so don't let it put you off. However, I couldn't quite see what the fuss was about for One Night in Mong Kok, and I don't altogether see what the fuss is about the Shinjuku incident either, which is not to say it's a bad film exactly. It's nothing like as action-filled as I'd been led to believe, and that's probably a good thing, having seen it. I can't fault the scope of the piece, sprawling as it does over the years. The story and setting are certainly interesting enough, but it's probably that same ambition that stops it feeling particularly real. By necessity, it jumps around too much in time and location to really get a feel for what the characters involved are thinking at precisely that time, and the intrigues between the police, the Yakuza, and the various gangs of ethnic criminals that are beholden to the Yakuza are often underdeveloped and slightly impenetrable. The few scenes of gang warfare that do break out are competently handled, but nothing groundbreaking. The character arcs, not just of Jan's character, but of most of the supporting actors, are perhaps the strongest suit for the film, and work well enough, ironically perhaps, in spite of the shortcuts the narrative is taking to further the plot. The real story here, I suppose, is Jackie Chan's performance, which, much like the film itself, is above average but not earth-shattering. He's believable and likeable, and as a general rule, the acting from all of the cast is more believable than the plot they're progressing. So I certainly hope to see more of this sort of thing from Jackie Chan. As much as I love his action output, I'd rather not see him accidentally bounce down a hill or get sideswiped by a helicopter again, so that I can continue to watch him for a few more years yet before he retires. As for this thing in particular, the Shinjuku incident is certainly good enough to recommend, although perhaps not quite good enough to recommend making extraordinary efforts to track down.
I don't have an awful lot to say to that, given that I rather foolishly entirely forgot all about watching it for this podcast, as I was intending to. Is it worth me catching up on, or should I just look for something better for next week instead?
I think it would be. I would say it's the strongest of the films that we will talk about here, just to ruin the surprise for you. As I say, it's really not doing any one thing in particular that's groundbreakingly innovative or exciting, but I think that it all adds up to being good enough to be worth a watch, and if nothing else, it's good to see Jackie Chan actually act, rather than just fall over and gurn and hit something with a ladder. So yeah, if it's knocking around, certainly take a chance on watching it.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that. I do like a bit of Jackie Chan. It'd be nice to see him not being some sort of fall guy or comedy fool, perhaps, as he's been more or less than most of his Western stuff.
Yeah, I don't really see much in the way of dramatic stuff from his older Hong Kong-based stuff. I mean, it tends to be fairly serious roles that he's in, but for the most part, you're still really only watching it for the big action set pieces, and the bits in between are just kind of filler to get there. Things like Police Story and all that kind of stuff. They may be more or less serious roles, but he's not really stretching himself in those, whereas this one, it does actually feel more like he's attempting to be a dramatic actor rather than anyone else. On that basis alone, it's interesting. Certainly if you're a Jackie Chan film, it's highly recommended.
I'll watch it.
Yes, you do that. Great. So then, Chloe, on face value, there seems to be little point in remaking a film from 6 years ago simply to put it in another language, but that's more or less what we're faced with here. Atomic Goyan, which has to be one of my favourite directorial names after Danny and Oxide Pang, takes the essence of Nathalie and airlifts it from France to Canada. Liam Neeson plays David, a middle-aged professor married to Julianne Moore's Catherine, a middle-aged doctor. There doesn't seem to be much in the way of spark in the relationship anymore, and Catherine fears that David may be cheating on her. Clearly, the best way to approach this midlife crisis is to hire a local woman of negotiable affection and attempt to seduce Davo and report back on the results. Somewhat unusually, after finding out the answer to this is yes, Catherine decides to carry on the charade, continuing to hire Chloe, the titular escort, seeming to take pleasure in the graphic reports of the goings-on. Before long, the entropy of the situation rather gets the better of everyone involved. But is it worth watching to see the fallout?
Oh, first of all, it is a remake, which are generally more or less pointless anyway. And in this case, I would say it very much is, if you want to see this, watch the original because it was better. That said, if you've seen this, it's a reasonably competent thriller. Amanda Seyfried as Chloe is reasonably compelling, reasonably believable as the hooker that can persuade pretty much anyone to fall for if it's necessary. And Liam Neeson and Julianne Moore are entirely acceptable and believable as the middle-aged couple whose romance has lost its spark. The problem with it is, other than, as I say, being an unnecessary remake, is that while most of it is quite competent, it seems to have added in an anime. Be remembering this wrong? I don't think so, but if anybody can correct me, I'm happy to be corrected. I don't remember a sort of Fatal Attraction style twist being introduced in Nathalie, and it is in Chloe, and it doesn't really add anything. The original film, the story seemed more about someone who was sad and lonely, whereas this, it's more about being unhinged and desperate, and it doesn't really work. It also doesn't work as well in that the story itself just feels more believable in France than it does in Canada. I may be talking out of my arse here.
Well, to be honest, I imagine this sort of thing would happen at least 5 times before breakfast in France.
Yes, I mean, I may be talking out of my arse, but certainly that's the impression I'm left with. It just feels more right in France.
It doesn't feel particularly Canadian, and it doesn't feel particularly British or any other culture other than France, does it?
I've no huge complaints with it other than the extra bit that seems to have been added in over the original. As I say, it's a competent enough thriller. Everybody involved is reasonably compelling and believable in their role. It's just the main thing, again, it's a remake, therefore it's pointless, especially when the original is better and seems more suited to the country it was produced in.
I assume that I watched Nathalie back in the day, but I really cannot remember anything about it. And I'm pretty sure this time next year I will remember nothing about Chloe. It just does not stick in the mind at all. There's not really an awful lot here. In fact, I remember walking out of this film having no real ill will towards it, but the more I think about it, and the more you hold it up to the daylight, the more it just crinkles and falls apart. The story is just really not believable in the slightest. The characters aren't really given much to do with, and not really any, very little development happens. I think the pure fact that it's a really great performance from Julianne Moore kind of holds this thing together, and if it had been any less talented actress in the role, I just think the film would be unwatchable. You'd just be laughing at it all the way throughout rather than sort of at least giving it a pass. It sort of makes sense if you go along with its own internal logic. It kind of works well enough, but it's quite a big ask in what is at least initially trying to be a fairly realistic relationship drama, and then it turns into nonsense quite quickly. And I didn't really think any of this while I was watching it. It kind of stumbled along well enough and I was happy enough to watch it, but the more I think about it, the less I like this film. My normal solution to this is to simply stop thinking about it. So, moving on. Before watching Case 39, my notes for this introduction was something along the lines of social worker Renée Zellweger saves a young girl, Jodelle Ferland's Lilith Sullivan, from her parents who are about to kill her. She adopts her, and then soon weird shit starts a-happening like Vanilla Ice trying to rap again. After watching it, I see little need or reason to expand on that introduction. Drew, begin hammering nails into this film, please.
The weird shit being that the social worker Renée Zellweger seems to think that she's saved this little girl from deeply abusive parents who were locking the child in an oven, and it quite quickly transpires that, in fact, it was the person in the oven and not the people enclosing her in there that's the evil one. And, well, unsurprisingly, it's a shitty horror that's shit and not horrifying. In terms of the events of the film, it reminded me a bit of was The Omen, but, you know, a spectacular shit version of it.
Yeah.
Because you've got sort of the evil child and then sort of really strange inexplicable things happening to anybody that tried to harm the child or anything. Whereas The Omen is probably the only decent horror film I've ever seen, if you consider a horror rather than a psychological thriller. This is just, it's just shit. Well, let's not beat about the bush here, it's terrible. First of all, the biggest problem it has is the child. The child is quite spectacularly unlikable. You spend pretty much all of the film wanting her to get hit in the face by something, you know, preferably a truck. And if you've got an evil character that's really unlikable, that kind of makes sense. But the film begins with Renée Zellweger having liked her so much that she wants to go out of her way to help her and then become her foster parent. And since the child is at no point in any way anything other than deeply, deeply unlikable, that just doesn't work. Then add in a completely artless handling of the film and utterly, utterly useless and artless attempts to scare people, like is an alarm clock ringing loudly in an empty house and a dog barking at a window, when there was no other tension in the scene at all. I was more thinking, you could see the cogs going round in the director's head thinking, nothing's happened for a while, I'll put in a big shouty bit here, that'll make everybody jump. And that's just indicative of how little abilities apply to the rest of the film. It's dull, there's an unlikable character, pretty lame performances all round. Avoid.
If I'm playing devil's advocate, I'll give it this at least, it's polished. I thought the acting was a few notches above what you'd normally expect for this sort of thing.
Yeah, that's not unreasonable. I mean, it's got Ian McShane in it, and I'm not a great fan of Renée Zellweger, but for the most part, she's never less than competent, even if she's not likable. But it just falls down on, because so much of it focuses around the child, and the child is appalling and hateful, quite frankly.
The effects work is pretty decent, but I remember saying pretty much exactly the same stuff about that Kiefer Sutherland shitfest Mirrors a few years back. It's incredibly polished, but it's still a turd. Yeah, I was giving it the benefit of the doubt for about, well, almost coincidentally enough, 39 minutes where it still seemed to think that it could be going down a more kind of psychodrama kind of route. And then as soon as it just becomes the devil child, lost all interest and started thinking about, you know, almost anything else rather than this. What I was actually thinking about is what Asian horror film this was a remake of. Turns out it's not actually a remake of anything, but it does seem to be borrowing sort of quite heavy stylistic elements from things like The Grudge and One Missed Call and all that sort of thing. It feels like a bit of a mishmash of that kind of stuff, but I don't even think they've got a particularly good source to steal from, and this doesn't do a particularly great job of stealing from them in that respect anyway. Yeah, it's not very scary and it's not much fun. If you have a film with a shotgun-toting McShane and it's still not any good, then you're doing something very badly wrong. So clearly this is doing something very badly wrong. And I just couldn't be bothered with the film in the slightest. Yeah, a total waste of 100 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Which I pretty much expected before I watched it, which makes me really stupid for watching it, I guess. But I thought having...
But it's our job, Drew. It's our job.
Yes, well, having avoided willfully the shitty horrors for most of our podcast for the last wee while, I thought, I'll watch this one. I'll take one for the team, which you rather foolishly did as well. You could easily have avoided this. I didn't suggest you watched it too. And, yeah, it's crap. I don't want to spend any more time talking about it. It's not any good.
Aboo! So, ending on something of a downer here, maybe not the best week for film. Personally, I'd say, if you've got a choice, try and get hold of the Shinjuku Incident over anything else that we've seen here. Drew, your thoughts?
Yeah, having not seen it, so it probably couldn't be worse than what I've seen. Unfortunately, there wasn't all that much last week apart from one that's now disappeared from cinemas that was any good, so I can't even suggest you go see something that was still out from that.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps there'll be something better out within a few days and you could see that instead. But I would avoid most of the stuff in our podcast this week.
Leave the cinema alone for a couple of days. Yeah, we hope to be back next week and we hope to be covering Crazy Heart, Shutter Island and Green Zone, which I at least have far more hope for than the ones I did in this podcast. So, till next time, I've been Scott Morris, and he has been Drew Tappendale.
Crusty jugglers.
Goodbye! So, we have five films to get through, and...
I thought it was four films.
Well, it is four, isn't it? Yeah. So I better not say that at all, because that would be simply wrong.